och välkomna till Filler Podcast nummer 5 i ordningen. Med mig Daniel.
Och mig Ramon. Det är ungefär en månad sedan som vi satt här och skulle spela in en podcast och prata lite punk. Men eftersom det är semestertider så har vi skitdålig koll på vad vi har sysslat med den senaste månaden. Vi har sett band.
Vad vi inte har sysslat med.
Eller vad vi inte har sysslat med, men vi satt här och reminissade lite, men kunde inte riktigt komma på vad tusan som har hänt under juli. Men det har säkert varit gött.
Ja, det är det väl alltid.
Ja. Det som har hänt, som vi vet, är ju att vi Power Trip spelade ju på Smedjan.
Mm.
Det var fullsmockat och det var riktigt, riktigt bra. Dagen efter tror jag redan. Var det va? Eller var det två dagar efter?
Med Red Death, Red tänker Death? Du på det? Ja. Nej, det var några dagar emellan.
Några dagar
14 och 17. Ser,
ingen koll. Men Red Death spelade på Skjulet också, helt grymt.
Ja, riktigt gött. Protester var fruktansvärt
ja,
bra.
Ja, Protester var riktigt bra. Riktigt. Så, vad hette det andra bandet som spelade som var lite mer street?
Och lite mer nästan
som jag inte gillade liksom, nej, men som alla andra gillade.
Nej, jag kommer inte ihåg vad de
hette.
Så mycket gillar jag.
Det finns en anledning till det att vi inte kommer ihåg.
Ja.
Scumraid och Sexdwarf spelade också på Skjulet. Var det dagen efter Red Death eller jag är ute och cyklar där också?
Ja, det är du säkert, men jag kommer faktiskt inte ihåg. Jag låg hemma sjuk i alla fall.
Ja. Svinbra också. Scumraid var ju helt sinnessjukt bra. Ja, så lite har ju hänt och lite koll har vi. Men det vi tänkte göra innan vi går vidare, det är att säga att vi tänker byta språk precis nu.
What?
Bara den här gången. Vi kommer alltså inte byta språk för alltid, men vi har nämligen pratat med Dave Dichter från MDC. Och då tänker vi att det vi säger om det också borde vara på engelska.
I och med att vi pratar engelska med Dave så
ja,
känns det logiskt att vi kör även introt till själva avsnittet på engelska.
Ja, för han kände inte för att prata svenska.
Nej, av någon konstig anledning.
Nej. Så bear with us liksom. Nu kör vi på engelska.
Det gör vi.
Ja.
Okej, hi. Welcome to Filler Podcast number 5.
In English this time.
For the first time.
Yeah, for the first time. And the reason that we're going to talk English in the intro and also in the outro, I guess, is that this time is the first time that we have an international guest since we've been talking to Dave Dichter of MDC, Millions of Dead Cops.
Or Multi-Death Corporation.
Yeah,
or
whatever.
Millions of Dead Children, whatever you want to call them. Yeah, they came through Gothenburg on Saturday, this last week, played with a local band called Svärta, and another Swedish band called Planet Thrash, which we
think are from Bollnäs.
Yeah, we debated this, we didn't ask them since we want to know things ourselves even if we don't.
And we didn't even Google it, so no, we're guessing.
Yeah, we're guessing.
We're stating right now that they are from Bollnäs.
They are Swedish.
Yeah, they are Swedish.
We had a chat with Dave for about an hour, about pretty much everything around the band, politics, his book coming out.
The situation in the United States with the presidential election.
We talked about sexualities.
The beef with the Bad Brains.
Exactly. We had a lot of things prepared to talk about, but Dave was really talkative. And he did most of the talking, which was pretty... That was okay. Like, yeah. It was
nice. Unusual, but it was at the same time... Made it really easy just us to go with the flow.
And it was really interesting just sitting there listening to a guy who's been in the punk scene for, I don't know, plus 30 years.
Something like that.
So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. And we were at Röda Sten, which is a really, really nice venue down by the harbor in Gothenburg. It's not usually a venue where we have punk shows, but this night, thanks to Jonk, it was. So,
and it's actually the perfect place because it's so nice outside. You have like graffiti walls and you have the harbor, like the boats coming in.
Yeah, and a restaurant with vegan food.
Yeah, and the sun was shining, so it was perfect. Yeah.
And MDC was there.
Yeah.
So pretty much a good night. And yeah, I think we should just like play the episode.
Yeah, enjoy it and we'll see you afterwards.
Yeah, have fun.
Here we are.
Here we are in Gothenburg.
How was Malmö? Last night?
It was really great. It was a Friday night.
Yeah.
I heard there was two shows and they combined it into one. there was a girl band, it was the first band. Hey, you guys in Pawnee Trench. What was the name of the first band last night with the girl singers?
Niuli.
Was it?
Yeah. Niuli, Nine Lives.
Nine Lives. They were great.
They're a new band.
Yeah, they're Nine Lives. I enjoyed
that. First show ever, I think.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
And, you know, the Swedish film, We Are the Greatest?
No.
It's a sweet about punk 13-year-old girls coming of age.
We are the best.
We are the best.
Yeah.
We are the best.
Yes.
The vocals reminded me of that. Oh, I mean, they were better, musicians, but it just came across to me now. I like that film a lot. We are the best.
It's a cool film.
I hope I bump into one of the girls.
Yeah.
Now she's probably a woman. I don't know how.
Probably.
Yeah. When did that?
3-4 years ago.
Time flies so fast.
Time does fly fast. And, you know, sometimes I meet someone when they're 16 or 18 or 20, and I had this one vision of them, and then I see them and they're 42 and they got big beards.
Like, not the same person.
You know, like, who are you?
Two kids, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm like, you know, my impression of them is as a young person holding a 40 ouncer or something.
Yeah.
We're going to turn the volume up a little bit.
What would you like to know?
We have a bunch of questions, but often we just talk and see where we land.
Sure. Let me tell you about MDC.
Yeah.
Decided to come back to Europe. We last year we came, had a great time. We hadn't been in 5 or 6 years. I wrote a book. It's called Memoirs from a Damaged Civilization.
Okay.
Memoir from a Damaged Civilization at MDC.
Yeah.
I got very sick 2 years ago. I had a staph infection. I was in the hospital. I had this thing called Mercer. It's a certain type of staph infection, very strong, and they have trouble antibiotics controlling because there's so much antibiotics out in the world. It's an up-and-coming health catastrophe.
Okay.
And I got exposed to it by taking care of my brother who was passing in hospice care. He had diabetes at the same time he had lung cancer and brain cancer, and they took off part of his foot, and I was rubbing his foot, being around him, and spending a lot of time in his last few weeks of life in the hospital. And unbeknownst to me, I most likely touched him, touched my nose, I breathed it in, it was in my body. And then I had a fall 3 months before and injured some of my inside my body. And nobody thinks about that when you fall down. Oh, I think I'm okay inside your body. May not be okay. Something is torn, something's broke, something is chipped. And so be careful, everybody. Because then the Mercer went to where it was in the kidneys and in the lungs. A little bit of the Mercer went and started growing. And they were very worried because they can't kill it. The infection will just eat up my kidneys. Eat up my lungs, that would be the end of me. And so they were telling me all this, and first couple of days I was pretty out of it. I was delirious, is the word, and hearing voices and seeing things. But then I got to the next stage where that wasn't happening, and I realized I want to write a book. So if I die, at least I leave something behind.
Leave something with you,
And then I started getting better and better, but the idea of doing a book became very important to me. And I was very stiff, because I had fallen down a flight of stairs, which caused the inside, the injuries, and then the Mercer came. And then when in the hospital, all the places where I fell and hurt really came back. Problem with my disc in my back. I had a terrible thing right below my cranium in the back of my neck, and I did this thing called they do a backbone check, and my backbone had all these curves which shouldn't be, should be rather straight. It was a long process to get back. But I decided very early, even if I was stiff, I was going on the road.
Yeah.
We toured the U.S. last spring, and we did 46 shows in Europe last summer. But we only did one in Scandinavia, and there was a lot of places we missed.
Yeah.
So this tour is trying to catch the places we missed Predominantly. And we're doing 9, 10, 11 up in Scandinavia here.
Yeah.
In Copenhagen and Malmo. And we go to Trondheim and then to Umea, then the Gamle, Stockholm, Jinkoping. And then we're doing a festival in Horten, Norway.
Yeah.
And then we come back into northern Denmark. And Skibby Picnic or something like that, near Aarhus.
Yeah.
It's basically the Aarhus scene, I believe. And so it's nice to play back in Scandinavia.
Yeah, really
beautiful by
the
docks, by a restaurant.
Yeah.
The woman who was the sound person at the squat we played last time we were here, 6, 7, 8 years ago, Anna moved to Portland. I see her from time to time. And we
That's
come
awesome.
Up to each other and go, I know you, blah, blah, blah. And there's a fellow named Marcos who I had a long talk with and hung out with the last time. I look forward to seeing him. I hope he comes tonight. Someone said he might be on. He might be away because he's
yeah.
got a job where he goes away
Marco...
with his job. You know Marcos from Goldberg?
No, I don't think so. It's not
no.
the guy you're
no,
thinking about.
No, it's not the guy I'm thinking about.
And so here I am. This is, I think, the 11th day of the tour. We got 29 more to go. And I love it. You know, I'd say my back and my health and my neck is about 90-95% better. I still stiffen the neck. I took a fall out of the van when I was getting some stuff in Hamburg the other night. You know, jumping up in the loft and moving things all the time. I gotta remind myself to slow down sometimes. I really don't drink very much, which is good, so I don't get drunk and fall on the harbor. You know,
fall in the water.
But I just love in life, and MDC the band with a message, hopefully, of hope, of cooperation, equality for everybody, to, you know, against Donald Trump and the way he thinks like that in America, and way certain people in Europe think, you know, don't want to accept the refugees,
definitely
not our problem. And, you know,
the
United States starts this war, all these countries get behind it, make a mess in the Middle East with Iraq and with Syria, all these problems, and then want to act like it's not our problem.
And no thinking about the consequences of the actions of the United
exactly.
States or Europe, why it's happening.
And you know, anyone who follows history closely, the Muslim Brotherhood was very much backed by the United States in the 40s and 50s as a bulwark against communism. You know, we pump up these religious leaders. They took over. Now it's coming back. These religious leaders keep playing on, you know, jihad, all this other stuff, which has been going on. And you know, instead of having a policy of love and cooperation, of social welfare for everybody, so the whole human planet can be one big party,
yeah.
one big community,
one big puncture,
one big punk rock scene.
Yeah. So do you think actually Donald Trump stands a chance to becoming the president?
I really think not, but you know, I'm wrong about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The kind of things, if terrorism continues
yeah.
and you know, enough people might go for it. And also very tricky with the election laws in the United States. Many states the conservatives have taken over and cut people off the rolls. You have to have new ID and new this and that to get on the voter roll. It takes money, takes
time,
and they're not making it easier for people to vote.
Yeah.
They're making it harder for people to vote.
Yeah.
And you never know how that plays out in the end.
It pretty much more sounds like a dictatorship than a democracy. So,
yeah, you know, that... and they also, the Supreme Court in the United States has made it where anyone can spend as much money on anyone they want. So if you're for Donald Trump, $1 billion. Men with $10 billion can contribute $1 billion. Sink the waves. Hillary Clinton is evil. She's bad. She's dishonest. She's the worst. We need nothing new. You know, just negative ad. A lot of people follow the negative things.
Yeah.
Fox News, the right-wing media. Hillary Clinton's a thief. You can't trust her. She's a liar. Over and over and over again. Whether it's true or not, It's right out of Germany in the 1920s and 30s.
Yeah.
Jews are bad. Jews are stealing the country. They're making everything bad for us here in Germany. If we got rid of the Jews, everything would be fucking good.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all a big lie. It's propaganda.
It's no different to Muslims today. Today, Muslims is the...
They learned it in the 30s and they're perfecting it now. And then I was watching a TV show where they had a TV show in India, just like Fox News Network, where they just, oh, Indira Gandhi's bad, 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 you know, complaining the whole time, we need change, blah, blah, blah. No matter what the deal is, they complained about Michelle Obama, President Obama's wife, going to a big thing where she had no sleeves on her dress. You know, the dress started from here down.
Yeah.
You know, they call it sleeveless with an open neck. And, oh, this is not right for a woman to be president. Now they got Donald Trump's wife who posed nude. Nobody says anything, you know, like.
But she, at least she stole Michelle's speech, so.
Yeah, she did take the, you know, but the right, there's so many people who don't listen, they only listen to the right wing, so they don't catch that on the news. We know that, and we can joke about it, but. They won't even talk about it.
It's the same here, you know. We have like the Swedish Democrats, a really right-wing party, and they can fuck up royally as many times as they want.
Right.
People still vote for them.
They had a, there was an incident maybe 5 years ago in Stockholm on the streets, in the middle of the night. They've been out partying, and a comedian from Sweden, which is from, I don't know where she's sort of from, but
maybe Sweden. You know,
it's almost part of human nature. Where people aren't trying as hard as us. You know, Ramon, Martin, Dave, we're the good ones. But those people out there asking for handouts, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter. Tomorrow we need a handout.
Yeah.
Tomorrow we need food, housing, emergency, our health is bad. You know, people don't think like that. They think just right now, yeah. I'm working, I work hard. And it's those people who aren't working. The Iraqi refugees I saw in Malmo, they're spending and eating my money. You know, it's like, it's, and they do it in the U.S. as well. Like black people are taking all the welfare money. And, you know, on and on. The Mexicans are stealing all the jobs. And it's just like, it's a fantasy that's, in some cases, not at all correct. They've shown how the Mexicans illegally work in the United States, getting paid, don't receive Social Security or benefits, so they pay taxes and get nothing back. So, you know, it's just a lie. It's a myth to say they're taking all our health benefits, and they're not. And they've proven it. The right wing doesn't want to believe it. And general people don't study politics or the news. They pay attention to politics, maybe half hour a week, maybe 15 minutes a week, and not for months at a time. Now, just as the election is starting, the Republican convention in the U.S. and Democratic, now people start to tune in, and you know all they know is, oh, I heard Hillary Clinton is a liar, and Donald Trump, he's new, he's crazy, but I think maybe that's what we need, you know, and it's like, oh my God, you know, like. People don't stay informed, and they, you know, they don't encourage people to be informed. And you know, we talk about it, how they dumb down the educational system. All the people, oh, not everyone needs to go to college. Why do people need to know about, you know, Dostoevsky or, you know, Karl Marx or about, you know, anything, you know, rich literature? Well, they don't care about that. Let's just give them some Spider-Man comics, teach them how to fix a car. And push them out there. And the truth of the matter is, we really need to live in a society where people get educated and people know and they have the knowledge and they have the wisdom and they can talk about different topics and people just don't tune out. Because as soon as you talk about whatever it might be, macroeconomics, space travel, anything, they just tune out. I don't want to know, I don't need to know. You know, it's part of the human experience just to want to enjoy our life. And I really understand that.
Absolutely.
You know, you want to just sit on the harbor with your feet in the water, thinking about the person next to you and giving them a kiss. And you can worry about the problems of George Bush, Iraq, refugees, Europe, Mexican migrants in America. I don't want to even hear about it. I just want to, I work 40, 50 hours a week, and with my time off, I want to play with my little boy, I want to hug my wife, and the rest of the time I watch good, a nice movie or a TV show, and that's that. And it is sad. My son graduated college, and he said, you know, I'm in a class where they're talking about Darwin, and half the class graduating university did not know who Charles Darwin was. And he goes, God, Dad, you know, like, these people, no one's curious to even know. And people, Darwin, oh, who's Darwin? Oh, he discovered evolution. Oh. And, you know, they don't even realize how the significance of something like that is. You know, French Revolution, on and on and on, the Magna Charta, the Protestant Reformation, how it changed what was going on with the Catholic Church and the Protestants. They don't even want to know, you know. And it's, here we are, you know, we try to encourage everyone to want to know so you can make an informed choice as a human that has experienced the culture, reading, writing, music, drama. Winston Churchill said, you know, at the time, people were saying we shouldn't pay for opera art and this, out of the British take, goes, that's what we're fighting to protect. So I'm not going to cut the arts. We're going to find the money because this is our society, where now everyone just acts like all that matters is the bottom line. Oh, it's too expensive to support an opera house. Let's close it. So now there's less and less opera. And that's what's happening with all the arts. And it's very sad.
We had an issue with a cultural minister in Sweden a while back who thought that artists, professional artists, should they could get a real job. And then they could do art on their spare time. And this was the cultural minister of Sweden.
Oh, wow. That's the cultural minister said that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which her job is to promote culture. To promote art, to promote music or whatever art you're doing. So,
being an artist or a writer or a singer or a musician isn't really important work.
No.
You should be over at Volvo, twisting a wrench and get, you know, minimum wage. That's what's important.
You want the music, you want the art, you want the whatever, but you don't want people to, you know, get anything from it from doing it. That's the fear, you know, that... you get money from doing your hobby or whatever you want to call it, that's not a real job. You should.
And the internet is doing that with music and musicians, and you hear people complain. And it's true, you know, at a certain point we sold 20,000 of this and blah, blah, blah. Now it's a few thousand because people can download it. And it, you know, it really, I think. It pushes us to be more clever to make our package something. You not just want the music, but you want what's behind the music.
Yeah.
And so that's where you sell your album at the show with your poster, with your art inside, so people can save it and value it. But still, we're selling a lot less than it used to be, and you hear everybody complain about it. I think the guy that wrote Happy Song, you know, from one of those Disney movies, made so little money on it. It's unbelievable. A movie that made $400 million worldwide, and his hit song in the movie made $17,000 or something. And you're like, wow. You know, you can write a hit song in a Disney movie and just receive $17,000, something that sold $400 million. The first year we did downloads, I think we sold 80,000 and got 8 cents a copy or so, and it ended up being around $560, you know, so you sell 8,000 and 80,000 and you get $560.
That's
crazy.
Whoa.
It's a lot to gain something from it, obviously, but yeah.
So do you think, you talked about people not wanting to know stuff anymore. Was it an active choice to be a political band? Because I think NBC is pretty political.
We are pretty political.
Yeah. So was that an active choice that you said?
Oh, of course it was. It totally was. I started the band with Ron Posner. I was just writing him an email when he came. He had to stay home. His back wasn't doing so good, and he's got some business he had to take care of. But he was like, Dave, go with Bill, who was a guitar player in 1990 when Ron dropped out of the band at another point. And Bill knows all the songs. He's like a he's like an old friend and an old brother. So, what was the question?
If it was an active choice.
Oh yeah, Ron and I started the band together, and we told the time we saw Ramones and the Clash and the Dead Boys, and our first songs were John Wayne Was a Nazi and Corporate Death Burger, and you know, even the social ones. My Family a Little Weird. We've always been a balance. Not everything is 100% politics for us, because we wanted to write about our own feelings about things. Whether so a song like My Family's a Little Weird,
there's a little humor in every song also, I think. I mean, even the titles.
We try to, you know, because I've seen other bands be very dry, very dogmatic, and Crass pulled it off.
Yeah.
But a lot of other bands, it gets boring quick. It just becomes a slogan.
I think people need a little bit of humor as well, because they, as what we have talked about, is people being a little bit afraid of being too serious when it comes to politics and stuff. So if you have a little bit, a hint of humor in it, it would be easier for people to digest.
Yes, I find that, you know, you got to put some humor in there, you know, because it'll just get tiring and boring. And just to keep ourselves happy, you know, but NBC's tried to make a balance between being very serious, but also having this sense of humor, and I hope we've accomplished something, you know.
I think so.
We've been a band 37 years, and I love what I do. I told you how I got my health back.
Yeah.
Now I'm just doing 100 gigs this year. We did 74 last year, and I'm already planning for New Year's, maybe go Indonesia, Japan, Malaysia, and then go across Canada, April, and then back into the U.S. just to stay busy. I put out the new book, and it's on Alternative Tentacles, or maybe here, just we'll go to Amazon. But I gave it my heart. I really tried on it for 2 years, and I'm really happy it's on Manic Deep Press, and my publisher, who is also my editor, it's a one-woman thing, really caught what I was trying to do, and we shaped it. And I kind of wrote it like I was Burroughs meets Kerouac meets David Sedaris, if those names mean anything to you.
One of them.
Yeah, exactly what I thought.
You know Burroughs.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kerouac, Jack Kerouac wrote...
actually, it rings a bell.
On the Road.
On the Road, no.
Famous hippie beatnik book, you know, kind of encouraged
a
lot of people to look at life as, like, don't become a cog in the machine, you know. And it's about this guy who's floating out there on the road, and he bumps into different, and he gains wisdom, and he sees life by being on the road, taking the chance to live with nothing so you can learn and come away with something, and not being concerned at 17 years of age, oh my God, I gotta support myself, I'm gonna have a future, I'm gonna work for a bank, and discount all the possibilities of experiencing life freely, and, you know, taking an adventure. And sadly, you know, that's what happens to a lot of people. They get caught up, you know, and pressured into a job, into marriage, into a structure young in life that becomes their prison.
It's really easy.
And On the Road espoused that. David Sedaris is a more modern writer. He's a gay man. He does this self-effacing type of life experiences. And he talks about how in third grade he talked with a lisp, and they called it a language disorder, which meant what it really was is he's coming out gay. Because he would talk with a lift. And he'd go, thank you very much. You know, you know, there's a way and a way of talking that some people who are gay talk, and they spotted it on him, and they were going to try to correct the way he talked, hoping they were going to fix his sexuality.
That's crazy.
And, you know, and then he's going through the process. What's wrong with me? Something must be very, very wrong if they think that I'm, you know, and he's not even aware of his sexuality, and they know, but all they know, he knows is something is wrong with him. And he talks about how he had to go through that and all the hurdles that he had to become gay, and how they people want to re-educate you, oh, you just meet the proper girl, blah, 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 you know, and he makes jokes about it. And he does these other great stories where he plays an elf at a department store for Christmas, and just the crazy people involved, the Santa Claus is an alcoholic, and all the other elves have all these problems going on, you know, and in their lives, and just he looks at the humor of it all and just how people interact with each other. So I tried to make it funny as well as making it, you know, an adventure like on the road. This is the journey I took in my life. And then also with Burroughs, just exposing it all, the good, the bad, the ugly, the drug years, the clean years, you know, almost dying years.
So it's coming out on Yellow's label.
It's actually come out on Manic D Press.
Okay.
Jello is selling it.
All right.
Through Alternative Tentacles. The mail order, the main mail order. So you can also get it at Amazon if that's easier. Of course, mailing between Europe and the U.S.
Expensive.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
I had two Europeans. It's $23 United States money to send one book from Portland, Oregon to Holland, where I sent one to. And
becoming an issue
that's
with
crazy.
With the shipping costs.
You know, the book is $15. The shipping is it becomes a $40 book.
When we buy records from the United States, it's crazy. We pay more for the shipment than for the record.
Yeah, yeah.
It is crazy.
And I know I'm aware of it because for our tours, we ship our own records. There's no one doing our. We have one label. And we signed a contract with them that he does it all worldwide. And, you know, the album ends up costing $18 or $20, you know, where an album costs about $3.50, $3, you know, so everyone else, the freight charges, the label costs, you know, our little cut.
Yeah, everything costs money.
Everything costs
it's
money.
It's hard. So, but did you, talking about Jello, did you tour back in the days with the Dead Kennedys?
Oh, the book talks about it, our first big tour to Europe. Where we actually played with the Dead Kennedys was in 1982. It was New Year's Eve, I believe, 1982, or late December, 1982. Maybe I'm mixing things up.
82. We made it
to Denmark in 83, but we toured with the Dead Kennedys, 18 gigs in 1982. I don't think we played Denmark, as I think about it. But that introduced us to Europe, and it really gave us a leg up in the world. People learned who we were. We were started able to do tours by ourselves, and, you know, pay for the airplane tickets, this, that, and the other thing. And here I am.
Here you are.
37 years later.
Still in Europe.
You know, touring Europe one more time. This is my 20th tour to Europe.
That's cool.
And, feel very, very blessed for the opportunity to travel. We've been to Brazil, Australia, New Zealand, Hawaii, Mexico, and
pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
I look forward to going to Malaysia, maybe Thailand and Indonesia this year. That would be very, very nice. And hopefully, sometime get to Middle East. You know, it's kind of crazy there now. You know, I don't know if we would help or be a good message or what.
I think people would actually enjoy it. I mean, they must pretty much hunger.
I know there's a scene in Israel.
Yeah.
Almost
yeah.
We're going to go, and it was a very break-even deal. You pay for the plane tickets or the boat ride, and we'll show up.
Yeah.
Whatever instrument, whatever amps you have, we'll play through. You know, feed us. Eat us, you know, hummus and bread with some olives, and we'll do that for 3, 4, 5 shows, whatever you want. And then the guys kind of backed out a little. He wanted us to buy the tickets.
Yeah.
You know,
And I guess it's kind of risky for them to I think it's risky for them to do shows.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of risk involved, yeah. And you know, then it put the risk on us. You know, if he's going to buy the plane tickets, I'll go.
Yeah.
If you're not going to buy the plane tickets, then it's the risk on me, and I got to depend on what you're doing. And I went to Brazil one time, and the promoter, who was a nice, idealistic kid, but he didn't have a lot of business savvy. He didn't really figure out how he would recoup his money.
Yeah.
He had a bunch of his friends playing with us, a big bus to tour around with, but the amount that they could charge at the tour wasn't enough to pay for. It was enough to pay for the bus and to feed everyone, but not our airplane tickets.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was $1,200 a person to fly at the time from the U.S. to... So I think I lost around $4,000. Maybe I earned some back, because we took our own merch. We took we took CDs down, and we took some T-shirts down, and we were able to sell them. So it was a great adventure. Looking back on it, I'm really glad to have gone. At the time, I was a little like, wow, this is costing me a lot of money. At the time, I was teaching in New York City and making $35,000 a year. So it was okay.
What do you teach?
A special ed teacher.
Okay.
I worked with many different kinds of special ed, but developmentally disabled, which is a fancy word for MR, or mentally retarded. That's the most of my years. 5 years, I think, I worked with mentally retarded. A couple of years with severe emotional, and then a couple of years I worked with teaching English, teaching reading, and modifying lesson plans for students. And for a while, I was a teacher assistant, and I would assist the teacher, and I would take all the kids that were having problems. She would teach the class, and I would try to stay with 4, 6, 8 kids, and, you know, whatever we could do. And they'd be like, you know, depending on what grade, sometimes like, fuck you, I don't want to learn shit, go fuck yourself. And I would have to deal with it, and I have to say, okay, well, thank you.
Just you know, on an NBC album.
You know, well, but the people that are going to listen to me and answer and talk to me, they're going to get a Spider-Man comic, but you don't have to do it if you don't want it. And they go, I want a Spider-Man comic, you know. It was all about motivation, behavioral problems, which are very much interconnected with learning disabilities, and straight up physical disabilities. I have some children with cerebral palsy, mixed, you know, they had mixed diagnoses, or dual diagnosis, as they say in that part of the world.
Yeah.
But people who have more than one problem. They might be dyslexic, they might be retarded, and they might have fetal alcohol syndrome, which led to behavioral impulsive actions. It was very fulfilling. I did it between 1995 and 2003. And then I've done part-time since. Very intense. I love doing it, but exhausting. And I found myself coming back to punk rock full time. At the time, I had to raise my son, and I had to stay home. I was a single parent. I didn't want to go on the road and leave my son with friends or grandma or something like that. I did leave him with grandma many times, but not too much.
So you're doing like NBC full time?
I do NBC full time now. But I also paint murals with my bass player, and in Oregon, we grow marijuana. It's legal there, and we have a little farm that we work, and we package it, we trim it, we grow it, protect it, spider mites, not too much water, not too little water, not too hot, not too cold, not too windy. All the things it takes to grow good marijuana, the right soil, the right everything. And you grow marijuana, and depending if it's sativa or indica, certain marijuana is good for if you're hungry and you have cancer, it raises your blood sugar level, and then you want to eat, and it's good for people that are very sick to eat. And then others is for mental health, slows your brain down. I like the stuff that makes you creative. The sativa, you know, where your head just goes, woo, I got an idea for a song. I want to paint a picture. And Mike and I have one children's book completed, and it's coming out next spring.
All right.
It's called Ellie and Nelly, the Vegan Elephants Tour the World. And he's Ellie and I'm Nelly. And we're the two elephants that go around the world, and we bump into Jello Biafra, we bump into Keith Morris of the Circle Jerk, we bump into Dick Lucas of the Subhumans, and we go to the Great Wall of China, we go to the Roman Colosseum, and we're discussing vegan food, what kind of food we eat, apples, fruits, vegetables along the way, and we visit our duck animal friends, and that's what that book is about.
Sounds like a book that even adults would want to read, though.
At least punks.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, vegan punks. We're aiming it for kids, but with an eye towards the punk market,
yeah.
Punk parents. But with my new book, I want a housewife in the middle of Sweden to read it and go, that's funny. You know, that's a life. This person had a life. He's sharing his experiences, and I can relate. And reading that, it makes me want to live my life full. Yeah. And, you know, happy to say I stay in touch with Facebook, and I have a lot of friends on Facebook who say, you're living the life that I want to live. You're traveling. You're getting to sit in the harbor in Sweden. You know, I'm back home. I got to pay. You know, you've created this artistic life where if you don't make a lot of money, at least you can pay for your life you're doing. And
you're getting experiences.
And you get to share it with them on Facebook and share your pictures. And and that's what I hope I'm doing with the books and for the children's books, for them to dream big. In one part of the elephant book, they take a nap and they dream about going to the Arctic Circle. They dream about going to the moon. They dream about all the planets. And we want the kids to dream and follow their dreams, like Ellie and Nelly.
The vegan elephants.
Yeah.
Vegan elephants.
That's awesome. So if we take it back to MDC... at first, it was Millions of Dead Cops.
That's
always,
right.
And that's what it stands for.
Right.
Later on, you always only said MDC, MDC, MDC.
Yeah.
Was it like two?
The story behind that, we started out as Millions of Dead Cops.
Yeah.
And we were so proud of it. We're from Texas. The cops were crumbling. And then, you know, and we put out the first album. Everything, much success. The front of the album says MDC. We always had that, like, you know, step away from it. But the back of the album said Millions of Dead Cops. We started traveling on tour. And we got so much trouble for being Millions of Dead Cops. In tours, people put it on the posters. We started encouraging MDC. And right away, and there's a story too, we also went to visit Crass at the Crass Farm. And they were like, why don't you consider using the MDC name to branch out to other things you want to talk about.
Yeah.
And we did the Multi-Death Corporation, and then Millions of Damn Christians, and Metal Devil Cokes, Magnus Dominus Corpus.
That was Crass's idea?
Well, Crass said, you know, didn't say, why don't you do this? Penny said, if I had to be an MDC, I'd be My Dear Constable. And he was very much a pacifist.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how he was telling me that's how he'd approach it. And it stirred something in my mind. So I give him credit for stirring my mind.
Yeah.
To say, you know, it just sounds like we hate the police, but it's much more. The police are just the arm of the rich and the people that control the Multi-Death Corporation.
Yeah.
People that create war weapons, that create waterboarding technique equipment, that build, you know, atom bombs, that build all the different airplanes for war, blah blah blah. So we wanted to focus on them, and then we also wanted to do Millions of Damn Christians, showing how the religion has divided us, Muslim, you know, versus the rest of the world, and Christian. Or then, you know, in Northern Ireland, even this type of Christian versus this type of Christian. We're all Christian, but we're still going to kill each other because my version of Christian God is better than your version of Christian God. And of course, there's economics underneath it.
Yeah.
And very interesting traveling to Northern Ireland and talking to the people there. And they just say, see, a lot of these people, the IRA and the Ulster Protestant Irish, like the war because it makes them money. You blow shit up and you have to build it. And the people that own the building companies support the war.
Obviously.
And just like the United States, the people that lobby, you need 50 B-52 bombers. You need 50 of them to protect your global empire. And so they'll contribute to the Republican Party, who will say, yes, we need more and more war weapons. It's a dangerous world. Putin is bad. Blah, 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 blah. And they just keep this whole game going where the energy and the resources of our planets are being spent on war and preparation for war, torture techniques, radar. Sad, it's really sad reality. And for me personally, I talk about it in the book, when John F. Kennedy was killed in the United States, I was a baby. It was the first thing I remember. I was, you know, I say baby, I mean 6, 7 years old.
Was it 63?
63. You know, so I was 7, 8 years old. And it was the first thing. And I remember it happening at the time, and it was very, very evil to me. It was just like, you know, the president would be killed. But then as I went along, it's almost like the dream of a better world, the kind of man that would put a man on his back to swim after his PT boat got blown up by the Japanese. It was hoping for equality for America, to stop the racist segregation, you know, that we're all the same and equal, that they should murder him. And a lot of those dreams died with him. And then, you know, finally Ronald Reagan getting elected really solidified that in-between period of, you know, Nixon and Jimmy Carter in the United States, and to this, creating this Fox News network, all bad news all the time. You be afraid to go outside. Be afraid of black people. Be afraid of Spanish. Be afraid of the world. And you have all these people in America who have never left America. The congressmen, something like 3/4 have never been out of the United States of America. You know, it's hard for you to imagine being in Sweden.
Yeah.
What's the population who has never been out of Scandinavia even? Everyone goes to England or to Berlin or to Italy to see different parts of the world. It's the intellectual curiosity.
Yeah.
And that's part of the dumbing down of America, is have no curiosity. Only know your Bible. Only know your hometown. You're from the South. You're a Southerner. This is the way we do things here. And it's sad. People don't have a global view. They think the UN is an evil organization. And they don't even know why, but they, you know, they're so afraid.
Probably don't know where UN came from. Obviously.
Yeah. And that Eleanor Roosevelt, there are, you know, reactionary elements, and there have been since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
You know, that want to protect religious fundamentalism, that, oh, gay person should be stoned, oh, you know, whatever, someone, an adulterer should be killed, you know, and all the other eye for an eye things.
Giving us 10 more minutes.
Okay.
In this spot, at least.
Oh, yeah. I talk a lot, huh?
No problem.
That's
it's good when people
talk. That's the whole plan.
We need to talk. We need to ask about the bad brains. I know it's like probably a question we've been asked a million times.
The bad brains?
Yeah, the bad brains.
It's in the book as well. It's a sad piece of thing. We were their fans. We liked them. We liked their music, positive mental attitude. We played with them, simple gig. In Oakland, California. They liked us because we no war, no KKK. You know, we were overtly anti-racist. They liked that. We liked them for positive mental attitude. And it was so important to us to have African-American bands. people in our movement, so it wasn't just white people, middle class, bored middle class people yeah. playing like they're punk rockers. We wanted it to be a global thing in mixed races where everyone together we are going to make a better planet, a better music scene. So we went on tour with them, and they had some very reactionary, old-fashioned ideas.
Yeah.
You know, kind of Rastafarian from Jamaica, and to be gay is an abomination. They deserve to be, they are blood clot faggots that deserve to die. You said some very serious, not just like, hey, I'm not gay, I don't like it, that's who I am. Okay, you know, you can't make anyone like anything, but they were more than that. They were like, they should be killed, they should be beaten up, they should be driven away from us, and also that women shouldn't have any power, they should obey men. And like, that's not the universe that I want. You know, I like to think of myself as queer fluid, which means I have an open dream where I can change who I am and my sexuality. Sometimes I lean towards this, sometimes I lean towards this. And right now I have a female lover, and she's in that same space, but we can dream together even though we're pretty much a couple.
Yeah.
We dream together, share our fantasy landscapes, and they go in different directions all the time. And sometimes they include other people. And I love it. I recommend it to everybody. You know, and there was a point in my life I thought, I think I'm straight. I like women. Blah, 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 you know, and then I'd have these other fantasies that were like, not that. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, and one time in my life, I said, maybe I am gay. I'm coming out. I'm gay. But then it really, you know, it didn't really fit either. And I'm just kind of learning over the last 5-10 years what I really want. And I'm really happy where I am right now. I call it queer fluid.
Queer fluid.
Sounds healthy.
Yeah, sounds really healthy.
Yeah, and...
And you kind of light up when you talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like, definitely. Yeah, you smile.
Free at last, good yeah. God almighty, free at last. Because it's nice to be at home with your sexuality.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, society wants us to stay in the confines of religion, and... I want to fly as high as I can be and discover all my potential.
Based on that, just go back a little bit to the Bad Brains incident. Is that something that you think has followed Bad Brains through their career as a band? Like those opinions, have they been permanent, so to speak, or was that a thing happened then and then they kind of?
Through the years, I've seen HR. And he never really would like to talk about it. And he always said, oh, I was misrepresented, and that's not really how, you know. He wouldn't disavow it. He wouldn't say, no, I didn't say it.
Yeah.
But he realized it wasn't a popular subject. But, you know, people are just so interested in them because their music is special.
Yeah.
And they are special people.
It's a great band.
You know.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Like, punk kids today, who I know, that are really like pro-gay and anti-racist,
right.
You know.
And it's something that, you know, kids today say, they assume the world was like we are living now. In 1980, it wasn't so free and easy.
No.
You know, gay marriage wasn't accepted. You know, it was a real 20-30% of the population accepted gay people. You know, the average people over 35 years of age with kids didn't accept it at all. And a lot of kids didn't accept it at all. It's a changing world. You still get beaten up for being gay parts of the world.
Even here, I think.
Maybe even here.
Yeah.
But it was even worse back because there was a whole lot of people, I don't know how to feel about it. You know, a lot of people didn't give their opinion, didn't take a side. We called it sat on the fence.
I think maybe the difference before and now is that if you have those opinions now that gay is wrong, I think you also know that the majority of the people think it's wrong to have those opinions. but back in the days, right, it was the other way around.
Yeah.
It was pretty much, if you said it was wrong, nobody really said right anything against you.
It's easier to get called out today as well on the internet. Yeah. If you say something or write something, you sure get fucked up pretty yeah badly if you do yeah it in the wrong forum.
You know, but through it all, I don't want to be enemies with anybody. I got love in my heart for the world. I've made up with a couple of the bad brains, shook their hands, said that was years ago. They started to try to explain to me how they really feel now. It's like, that's between you and your maker. You want to share it with the public, share it with the public. You know, you're a human being, I'm a human being. You know, we all just have these different experiences that lead us to different conclusions.
Yeah.
I stuck up for what I believed. You know, you guys have to figure it out for yourselves. I'm not the fucking judge. I just know I don't want my people hurt. I don't want to crawl back into a closet. I don't want my children picked on for being gay. That's how I feel. So, you know, and I will stand up for that. And I will die for that. You know, I mean, that's how I feel. And you guys can do what you want to do. I mean, yeah, I'm tired of yeah I'm tired of this argument with you.
Yeah.
Because the real question is, how are we going to go on from 2016 to the future to make it a better, more inclusive human family with the Muslims, with
everybody,
gay people, with straight people, with Chinese people, with Eskimos, with everything under the sun? And that's what I want. You know, I don't want to win an argument and lose the planet.
I think those are good ending words.
I think so.
They are stressed.
Yeah.
That's a great line.
Yeah, it's a great line to end an interview.
Win the argument and lose the planet.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's awesome being here. Look, I'm looking at the harbor in Gothenburg, yeah, Sweden.
We're going to let you out to the harbor right
yeah
now.
Yeah, so you can see the sunset.
I will see the sunset.
If it's even now, I don't know.
Thanks a lot. Thank you
Thank
for
your
time.
You.
It was a pleasure.
And that's Ramon and...
Daniel. Yeah.
I think I called you Martin.
Yeah, you
before
did.
Daniel.
You have it on tape.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Cool.
Well, that was Dave from MDC, and was a pretty cool episode. We're stoked that he wanted to talk to us. We weren't sure when we got to the venue if he would like to talk to us.
If he was even able, if he had the time. So it was great for him sitting down,
yeah,
taking the time to do an episode, and I think it turned out well. Even if we didn't, as we said in the intro, talk as much about music as we usually do generally.
He pretty much controlled the podcast this
definitely
time.
Definitely.
It was kind of cool. It was a cool experience.
Yeah.
We would like to say thanks to him if he's listening. It was cool to see MDC again in Gothenburg. Last time I saw them, I played at Underjorden, which is a venue that we don't even have anymore. And last night, talking about cool bands, I saw Los Crudos at 128, which for me was the best show this year. It was really, really awesome. And on the 29th of July, we have Anti-Scene playing in Gothenburg at Pustervik. And on the 31st of July, we have Negative Approach playing at Skjulet. So, yeah, four really big and classic punk bands, hardcore punk bands, are actually playing in Sweden.
In Gothenburg?
Yeah, in Gothenburg.
And just during a week's time.
I don't know.
I don't know when that happened last time.
Yeah, it's pretty stressful, but at the same time,
yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah, and it's, to add to that, it's been a couple of local shows. And, I mean, on Sunday we had...
we put on a show.
Yeah, we had Tijuana Panthers as well. I know there's another show with Nightman on Saturday in Gothenburg. So it's a lot of good punk shows right now. Which, it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun to be alive. Like
even
it
if it's
should
stressful.
Be.
But well, obviously we will link everything that we've been talking about Dave and about MDC, and I don't know if we could get a link to his plantation. I don't know.
Maybe.
We'll see. But until next time... thanks.
Yeah. And
thanks
sorry
again
if we speak really bad English. It's just that we're not from America or England or wherever they talk English these days. So until then,
see ya.
Bye.